Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. 3 a.m. Hi, Jay. Ben drove off somewhere. I don't know where he is. I'm so tired. Hey, you know how if you say a word over and over again, it starts to sound really weird? Like, let's say the word is, I don't know, infertility. Infertility, 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 infertility. It's a twisty, curly, nasty word. Lots of syllables. Anyway, Jeremy, my darling therapist, as Olivia would say, my point is that things become weird and pointless if you examine them for too long. I've thought about being a mother for so many years, the whole concept has started to seem weird. I've wanted it, wanted it, wanted it. Now I'm not even sure if I wanted it in the first place. Look at Alice and Nick. They were so happy before they had the children. And sure, they love their kids, but let's be honest, they're hard work. And it's not like you get to keep those adorable babies. Babies disappear. They grow up. They turn into children who are not necessarily that cute at all. Madison was the most beautiful baby. We adored her. But the Madison of today doesn't seem to have anything to do with that baby. She's so furious and strange, and she can make you feel like an idiot. Yes, Jeremy, a 10-year-old can make me feel inferior. That shows a lack of emotional maturity or something, doesn't it? Tom used to bury his face in my neck, and now he wriggles away if I try and touch him. And he tells you the plots of TV shows with a lot of unnecessary detail. It's sort of dull. Sometimes I think of other things while he's talking. And Olivia is still gorgeous, but actually, she can be manipulative. Sometimes it's like she knows she's being cute. And the fights, you should see them fight, it's amazing. See, I'm a terrible auntie. I'm making bitchy remarks about those three beautiful children, whom I hardly see anymore anyway. So what sort of mother would I be? A horrible one. Maybe even an abusive one. They'd probably take my children away and give them to someone else. An infertile woman could adopt them. You know, Jeremy, once when Olivia was a toddler, I minded her for a whole day. Alice and Gina were out at some school function. Olivia was perfectly behaved, and she was so cute. She would have won an award for the cutest baby. But, you know, by the end of the day, I was bored out of my skull from walking around after her and saying, no, don't touch that. Ooh, yes, look at the bright light. Bored, tired, a bit irritable, I was relieved to hand her over when Alice came home. I felt as light as a feather. How's that? All this, oh, poor me, obsession with being a mother, and I was bored after one day. I've always secretly thought that Anne-Marie, my friend from the Infertiles, would make a terrible mother. She's so impatient and brittle. But maybe they're all thinking that about me too. Maybe we'd all make terrible mothers. Ben's mum is probably right when she says that nature knows best. Nature knows that I would make a terrible mother. Each time I get pregnant, nature says, actually, this kid would be better off dead than having a mother like her. After all, Ben's mum couldn't have children either, and look at her. She did make a terrible mother. The bottom line is, we shouldn't adopt. I don't want to be a mother anymore, Jeremy. A mother, a mother, a mother. A mother. Sounds like smother. It's a weird word. I don't even know why I'm crying. Franny's letter to Phil. Mr. Moustache turned up at my door this morning, just as I was about to leave for Tai Chi. I almost didn't recognize him. He'd shaved off his moustache. I said, I hope you didn't do that for me. His upper lip looked so naked. He seemed like an entirely different person, softer and gentler, although at the same time more sophisticated and masculine. He was wearing tracksuit pants and a t-shirt, and he said he'd been thinking he might give this tie whatchamacallit a go, but he said he felt shy about turning up on his own. I said, "Ah, yes, because you're such a shy, retiring type." We went along to the Tai Chi, and he was utterly hopeless. I had to keep trying not to giggle like a naughty schoolchild. Afterward, he looked so endearingly rumpled, I invited him back for a cup of tea and some of Alice's banana muffins that she'd given me last week. We had quite a chat. I told him how I'd recently become quite addicted to Facebook after an old student invited me to join. Little Matty Marks. Remember him, Phil? He's some sort of IT big shot these days. Mr. M was impressed. He said he used the internet a lot, but didn't know anything about Facebook. It made me feel quite hip. He told me about his two sons and how much he misses them. One lives in the UK and the other is in Perth. He said both his boys were adopted. My wife and I couldn't have our own children, he explained. That's why I felt so sorry for your granddaughter. He says granddaughter so naturally, even though he knows I'm not really related to Elizabeth. It may be to do with his own children being adopted. Perhaps it's not so presumptuous of him. Perhaps it's rather nice. I can't make up my mind. It's a very lonely feeling when all your friends are having babies, he said. He told me he could still remember the expression on his wife's face while they went to her niece's baptism, even though it was over 60 years ago. It made me want to punch a wall, he said. I wonder if he was reprimanding me for my babies are not the be-all and end-all comment. I wonder if he thinks I'm being a bit harsh about poor Elizabeth. Do you know something, Phil? I had always secretly hoped that you and I might have our own little baby. Just the one, boy or girl, didn't matter. I was 38, but I knew it wasn't beyond the realms of possibility. One of the sixth form mothers at the school had a baby at 41. She was almost embarrassed about it. She brought the baby to the school one day, and I remember holding out my finger for the baby to clutch and suddenly thinking, I'm younger than her. I felt that sudden rush of disbelief and exhilaration you feel when your ticket number is called in a raffle. I could still be a mother, I thought, and I felt like dancing. It was 2 weeks before what should have been our wedding day. 1 week before the phone call. It's true I've never been pregnant, but I know what it's like to lose the possibility of a baby. So of course I sympathize with Elizabeth, Phil. Deeply. My heart breaks for her. I've cried and cried for her each time she's lost another baby. It's just that sometimes I want to say to her, Darling, maybe you don't get to be a mother, but you still get to be a wife. Chapter 23. Right, seatbelts on, said Alice. Her hands shook slightly as she turned the key in the ignition. Did she really drive this gigantic car every day of her life? It felt like a semi-trailer. Apparently it was called an SUV. Are you sure you're safe to take them to school tomorrow? Because if you think there is any risk at all to the children, I'd rather drive them myself, Nick had said the night before when he was leaving. And Alice had wanted to say, Of course I'm not right, you idiot. I don't even know where the school is. But there had been something about Nick's tone that made the hairs on the back of her neck stand up with a powerful, strangely familiar feeling that was close to fury. He had such a sneery way of talking to her now. That snippy voice spoke up again in her head. Sanctimonious bastard, trying to make me look like a bad mother. I'll be fine, she'd said. And he'd sighed his huffy new sigh. And as she watched him walk out to his shiny car, she felt something almost like relief at the same time as she thought, But why don't you just come up to bed with me? Now her three children sat in the seat behind her. They were in horrible moods. If they'd been drunk last night, now they were all suffering from terrible hangovers. They were pale and snarly with purple shadows under their eyes. Had they slept badly because of her? She suspected she'd let them stay up way past their normal bedtimes. There had been a lot of vagueness when she asked them what time they normally went to bed. Alice adjusted the rear vision mirror. Do you remember how to drive? Asked Tom. Yes, of course. Alice's hand hovered nervously over the handbrake. We're late, said Tom. You might have to go quite a bit over the speed limit. It had been a strange and stressful morning. Tom had appeared at Alice's bedroom door at 7 a.m. and said, Have you got your memory back? Not quite, Alice had said, trying to shake her head free of a night of dreams all involving Nick yelling at her. "She hasn't got it back," she heard Tom cry, and then the sound of the television being switched on. When she got out of bed, she found Madison and Tom lounging around in their pajamas, eating cereal in front of the television. "Do you normally watch television before school?" Alice had asked. "Sometimes," Tom had answered carefully without removing his eyes from the TV. 20 minutes later, he was in a frenzy, yelling that they needed to leave in 5 minutes' time. That's when it emerged that Olivia was still sound asleep in bed. Apparently, it was Alice's job to wake her. "I think Olivia might be sick," Alice had said, as Olivia kept collapsing back against the pillow, her head lolling to one side, saying sleepily, "No, thank you. I'll just stay here. Thank you. Goodbye." "Mum, she's like this every morning," Tom had said disgustedly. Finally, after Alice had dragged a half-comatose Olivia into a school uniform and spooned cereal into her mouth, while Madison had spent half an hour with a roaring hairdryer in the bathroom, they had left the house, incredibly late, according to Tom. Alice put her hand around the handbrake. "Did you even brush your hair this morning, Mum?" asked Madison. "You look sort of disgusting. No offense." Alice put her hand to her hair and tried to smooth it down. She had assumed that she didn't need to dress up for dropping the kids off at school. She hadn't bothered with hair or makeup and had pulled on a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, and an old watermelon-colored jumper she'd found at the back of the drawer. The jumper was faded and frayed, and it had given Alice a start when she realized she remembered buying it brand new with Elizabeth just the other week. Just the other week, 10 years ago.
"Don't be mean to darling Mummy," Olivia said to Madison. "Don't be mean to darling Mummy," mimicked Madison in a sugary sweet voice. "Stop copying me."
Alice felt the thud of Olivia's feet against her lower back as she kicked the seat.
"We are so late," moaned Tom.
"Would you three just be quiet for once in your lives?"
snapped Alice, in a voice entirely unlike her own. And at the same time, she released the handbrake and reversed out of the driveway and turned left, her hand smooth and capable on the leather-clad steering wheel, as if she'd said exactly those words and done exactly that maneuver a million times before. She drove toward the lights, her hand already on the indicator to turn right. There was a sullen silence in the back of the car.
"So, what's happening at school today?" she said.
Madison sighed dramatically as if she'd never heard a more stupid comment.
"Volcanoes," answered Tom. "We're talking about what makes a volcano erupt. I've written down some questions for Mrs. Buckley. Some pretty tricky questions."
Poor Mrs. Buckley.
"We're making a Mother's Day surprise," said Olivia.
"Now it's not a surprise, is it?"
said Madison.
"It is so," said Olivia. "Mum, it is, isn't it?"
"Yes, of course it's still a surprise. I don't know what you're making," said Alice.
"We're making special candles," said Olivia.
"Ha!" said Madison.
"Well, I still don't know what color they are," said Alice.
"Pink,"
said Olivia. Alice laughed. "Idiot," said Madison.
"Don't call her that," said Alice. Had she and Elizabeth spoken to each other in such a horrible way?
Well, there was that time Elizabeth threw the nail scissors at her. For the first time, Alice felt sorry for their mother. She didn't remember her ever yelling at them when they fought, just sighing a lot and saying plaintively, "Be nice, girls." They were pulled up at a red light. The lights changed, and Alice had no idea where to go.
She said.
"Straight ahead, second on the left," said Tom laconically from the back, sounding so much like his father that Alice wanted to laugh. Alice drove. The car was huge and unfamiliar again. She saw she was driving behind a similarly huge car with a woman at the wheel and two small heads bobbing about in the back. Alice was a mother driving her three children to school. She did this every day. It was unbelievable. Hilarious.
"So compared to the other mums at school," she said, "am I strict?"
"You're like a Nazi," said Madison. "You're like the Gestapo."
"You're about average," said Tom. Like, for example, Bruno's mum won't even let him go on school excursions. That's how mean she is. But then there's Alistair's mum. She lets him stay up till 9 o'clock, and they have KFC whenever they want, and they watch television when they're eating their breakfast. Hey, said Alice. Oh, yeah. Tom gave a dry chuckle. Sorry, mum. When am I like the Gestapo? Asked Alice. Don't worry about it, sighed Madison. You can't help it.
I don't think you're strict, said Olivia. Just sometimes you get a bit angry.
What makes me angry? Asked Alice. Me, said Madison. Just looking at me makes you mad. Running late for school normally makes you really mad, said Tom. Let's see, what else? Door slamming. You can't stand it when a door slams. You have got really delicate ears.
Daddy makes you angry, said Olivia.
Oh, yeah, agreed Tom. Dad makes you the angriest.
Why?
Alice tried not to sound too interested. What does he do that makes me so angry? You hate him, said Tom. I'm sure that's not true, said Alice. You do, said Madison wearily. You've just forgotten that you do. Alice looked in the rear vision mirror at her three extraordinary children. Tom was frowning at a chunky plastic wristwatch. Olivia was staring dreamily ahead, and Madison had her forehead pressed against the car window, her eyes closed. What had she and Nick done to them? This casual talk about hatred. She was filled with shame. I'm sorry, she said.
Sorry for what?
Said Olivia, who seemed to be the only one listening. I'm sorry about your dad and me.
Oh, that's okay, said Olivia. Can we have hot chocolates after school?
That's a green arrow, said Tom tersely. Alice pulled into a street lined with truck-like cars similar to the one she was driving. It looked like a festival. A festival of women and children. The women stood in groups of two or three, sunglasses pushed up on their foreheads, scarves slung around necks. They wore jeans and boots, beautifully cut suede jackets. Were mothers always this attractive and thin? Alice tried to remember the mothers from her own school days. Weren't they sort of chunky and plain? Sort of irrelevant and fading into the background. A few women waved when they saw Alice. She recognized someone who had got quite drunk at the kindergarten cocktail party. Oh, Lord, she should have done her hair. The children whooped and swooped about in their blue school uniforms, like flocks of tiny birds. All those innocent, smooth-skinned faces. We're not late, said Alice. We're late for us, muttered Tom. I've got a meeting of my spy club. They don't know what to do without me. They found a parking spot. Watch it, winced Tom as Alice backed the car into the curb with a thud. She breathed a sigh of relief as she pulled the keys from the ignition. The children immediately unclicked seatbelts and opened the heavy car doors with a clunk, sliding out of the car, backpacks slung over their shoulders. Hey, wait for me, said Alice, worried about procedures and kisses goodbye. As she got out of the car, she saw Dominic. He was wearing a tie, his shirt sleeves carefully folded up to his elbows, and he was squatting down to talk to three boys who were explaining something to him that appeared to be about a soccer ball. Dominic was nodding seriously as if he were in a top-level business negotiation. Two mothers were standing nearby, waiting to talk to him. Dominic caught sight of Alice and winked. Alice smiled self-consciously. He was nice. There was no denying it. He was very, very nice.
Have you slept with him yet?
Said a posh voice in her ear, and the heavy, sweet scent of a beauty salon filled Alice's nostrils. It was that dreadful Kate Harper woman again. Oh, hi, Alice reeled back. Kate was wearing a beautifully fitted trench coat, skin polished, lips shimmery. It was a bit much for this time of the morning. Kate didn't wait for an answer.
God, I'm jealous. It's been a year for us.
A year?
A year since we've done the deed. I must have cobwebs down there.
The thing strangers told you. Kate was still looking at Dominic.
The claws are out, by the way. Miriam Dane has had her eye on him for ages.
Apparently, she told Felicity that she thought it was rather poor form of you to go after him only 3 months after you and Nick separated. I promised I wouldn't pass it on, but of course I knew you'd want to know. She lowered her voice. Her beautiful face turned nasty. You'll die laughing when you hear this. Apparently, after she'd had a few drinks at the party the other night, Miriam called you the S-word. Alice looked at her without comprehension. Kate lowered her voice and whispered, "Slut." Then she raised it again and screeched, "Isn't that hilarious? Isn't that just so 80s? I thought I must tell Alice. She'll love that. The woman is pea green with jealousy. And of course she hated it when Tom kicked that goal at soccer, when, you know, she's been getting all that extra training for Harry because he's supposedly so talented. Ha ha, that little piglet." Alice felt sick. She looked around for her children, wanting an excuse to get away from Kate. Tom was sitting on a bench lecturing two other boys, who were listening intently. One even appeared to be taking notes. Olivia was doing a cartwheel while a group of girls applauded. She couldn't see Madison. "Well," she said, "you can tell that Miriam not to worry. Nick and I are getting back together." Kate grabbed Alice's arm so hard it hurt. "You're joking." "No." She thought of Nick's cold face last night as he said goodbye. "Well, anyway, we're working on it."
"But what happened? I mean, the things you were saying just last week. I mean, gosh, it just seemed completely irretrievable. You said you couldn't stand the sight of him. He made you physically ill. You said you could never forgive him. You said..."
"Forgive him for what?" interrupted Alice.
"This is such a surprise."
Kate pulled at a strand of gold hair that had got caught in her sticky, shimmery lips. She'd lost some of her posh accent in her excitement. "What did I need to forgive him for?" Alice repressed an urge to put her hands around Kate Harper's perfect neck and squeeze. "Hey there." Someone's hand settled gently on her shoulder. Alice looked up and saw Dominic standing next to her. "How are you, Kate?" said Dominic. His hand was still on Alice's shoulder, invisibly caressing her. It was nice, but Nick did that in public. "Congratulations, you two. Saturday night was great." He was such a strange mix of authority and shyness.
"How are you, Dominic?" asked Kate.
Her face was shiny with sympathy and fresh new gossip.
"Fighting fit for a Monday."
Dominic removed his hand from Alice's shoulder. She missed it, and shuffled his feet while doing an absurd little boxing move. He smiled at Alice and touched her arm again. "I'll talk to you later." She smiled back. He was looking at her the way Nick looked at her when they first started going out. It was a look that made her feel highly desirable and extremely interesting. She thought of how Nick looked at her now.
"Yes, okay," she said. "Oh, Dominic, we need you over here," trilled a woman.
He lurked off obediently.
"So I'm assuming you haven't told him then? About you and Nick?" asked Kate avidly.
"Oh, no, not yet."
"But it's definite?"
"Oh, well, yes, I think so. I hope so. It's sort of a secret."
"Got it. My lips are sealed."
Kate mimed the zipping up of her lips.
"What did I need to forgive Nick for?"
Pardon? Kate looked distracted.
"Oh, well, you know, we were talking about Gina."
"What about Gina?" In her head, she had Kate by the shoulders and was shaking her until her teeth chattered.
"You know, you were saying how he didn't even make the effort to go to the funeral. You seemed so... well, that's why this is so out of the blue."
"So Nick didn't go to Alice's best friend's funeral?" "Why not? There must have been a good reason. Surely they weren't getting divorced over that."
"Can I just say one thing?" said Kate.
She fiddled with a button on her jacket and looked up, her face awkward.
"Just, look, don't get back together if it's just for the kids. My parents stayed together for the children."
She hooked her fingers in the air to form quotation marks around "for the children."
"And let me tell you, children know when their parents despise each other. It's not nice. It's not a nice way to grow up.
And, you know, Dominic is a catch. He really is. So anyway, that's Kate's 2 cents worth for the day, my dear. I must go. Busy, busy, busy.
Kate clip-clopped off in her high heels, swinging her handbag over her shoulder and tightening the belt of her trench coat. Maybe she wasn't so dreadful after all. Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. I really thought about not bothering with this morning's blood test. Just not showing up, playing truant. But of course I was there right on 8 a.m., writing my name on the clipboard, presenting my forearm to the nurse, checking the spelling of my name and my date of birth on the test tube, pressing the cotton wool ball to the speck of blood. "Good luck," said the nurse as I left. She's the one who always says good luck in a sort of patronizing way.
"Oh, fuck off with your good luck," I said and punched her in the nose.
"Got you, Jay." I never said that. Of course I didn't. I said, "Thanks." Then I went into the office and Lila was there, all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and telling me about how well the rest of Friday's seminars went after I left, and how all the evaluations were positive, and she got 12 bookings for the advanced seminar. I said, "Are you even going to ask about the reason I had to leave early? You know my sister, the one who was in hospital?" And Jeremy, her earnest face crumpled. She looked so embarrassed, I felt like I'd kicked a kitten. She was falling all over herself to apologize. She said she thought I didn't like to discuss personal stuff. I don't. I never have. Poor woman. This is the final confirmation that I am a horrible person. Alice sat on her front veranda steps in the autumn sunshine, eating the leftover custard tart her mother had left behind, and wondering whether she was meant to be somewhere soon. Her diary for today said, "L, 10 a.m. Was L a person who was waiting for her somewhere? Was L important? She supposed she should call Elizabeth or her mother and find out, but she couldn't seem to make the effort. Maybe she would have a nap. A nap? Are you kidding? You have got a million and one things to do." There was that snippy voice again. "Go away," said Alice out loud. "I can't remember what those million and one things are." She closed her eyes and enjoyed the feeling of sun on her face. There was no sound except for the far-off roar of a motorbike, the amazing silence of the suburbs in the middle of the day. She normally only experienced this feeling if she was sick and took the day off work. She opened her eyes again and yawned. She might as well eat the rest of the custard tart now. There was only a sliver left. From where she was sitting, she could see the "for sale" sign on the house opposite. So that's where Gina had lived. Alice had probably been inside that stunning renovated character home many times, borrowing sugar or whatever. If Alice had thought about it at all, she would have assumed she wouldn't have made any new friends in her 30s. She had quite sufficient. Besides which, she really just wanted to hang around with Nick and Elizabeth, and she was going to become a mother. She thought that would have been enough of a distraction. Yet it seemed as though her friendship with Gina had been a significant part of her life. And then Gina had died, and she'd been devastated. It made Alice feel sort of silly, as if she'd made too big a fuss over something. The sound of the motorbike got closer. Goodness, it was coming up her driveway. Was this L? Alice wiped a hand across her mouth and put the plate down on the step next to her. A man in a black leather jacket, his face invisible behind his opaque black helmet, lifted a casual gloved hand in greeting as he pulled up in front of her. He stopped the bike and turned off the ignition. "Hey there," he said, as he pulled off his helmet and unzipped his jacket. "Hey," said Alice, and coughed because she'd never said "hey" to anyone before. He was so handsome, it was like a joke. He was all broad shoulders, biceps, piercing eyes, and stubbled jaw. Alice found herself looking around for another woman. There was no point in such a gorgeous man without a friend or sister there so you could exchange glances. Surely she wasn't dating him as well. It wouldn't be possible. He was way out of her league. He was a cartoon character. She felt a wave of giggles rising in her chest. "What are you doing eating just before a session?" asked the sex god. "A session?" asked Alice, Her mind raced. Oh, my lord, maybe he was a gigolo and he was here to service her. After all, she was a middle-aged woman with a swimming pool. That's not like you. He pulled off his leather jacket and his white t-shirt rode up to reveal his stomach. Well, it wouldn't be the end of the world. No siree, if she'd paid in advance, for example. Alice began to giggle helplessly. He smiled warily. What's the joke? He rested his helmet on the front of his bike and walked over toward her. What could she say? You're so good-looking, I find it hilarious. She was giggling so hard her legs felt weak. He looked frightened. For heaven's sake, attractive people were still real. They had feelings. Alice took a hold of herself. I had an accident, she said, looking up at him. Last week at the gym. Hit my head. I'm suffering a bit of memory loss. So I'm sorry. I don't know who you are or, why you're here. You're kidding. He looked down at her suspiciously. It's not April Fool's Day, is it? No, sighed Alice. Her giggles drifted away. She had a bit of a headache, actually. Damned head. I don't know who you are. It's me, he said. Luke. I'm sorry, Luke. I need more information. He laughed a bit, and his eyes darted around nervously as if someone might be watching him make a fool of himself. I'm your personal trainer. I come every Monday morning to give you a training session. Oh, for heaven's sake, no wonder she was so skinny. So we exercise, is that right? What do exactly? Well, we vary it. A bit of cardio, some weights. We've been doing well with the interval training lately. Alice had no idea what he was talking about. I just had 3 pieces of custard tart, she said, holding up the plate. Luke sat down next to her and helped himself to the last piece of tart. Yeah, I won't tell you how many calories you just consumed. Oh, thousands, said Alice. Thousands of divinely delicious calories. He gave her an odd look and said, Well, if you've got a head injury, I suppose we shouldn't be training today. No, said Alice. She didn't want to exercise in front of him. The very thought made her feel self-conscious. I'll still pay, of course. That's okay. No, I insist. Well, let's just make it 100. Geez, what did he normally charge? So this memory thing is just temporary, I assume, he said. What do the doctors say? Alice waved him away irritably. She didn't want to talk to him about that. $100? How long have you been my personal trainer? Luke stretched out his long legs and leaned back on his elbows. Wow, it must be coming up to 3 years now. You and Gina were like maybe my second ever clients. Bloody hell, she made me laugh in the beginning. Remember the fuss she made whenever we did the stairs down at the park? Not the stairs, Luke, anything but the stairs. She got pretty good, though. You both got so fit. He stopped talking, and Alice realized with a start that he was trying not to cry. Sorry, he said in a muffled voice. It's just that I never knew anyone who died before. Sort of freaks me out. Every time I come over to train you, I think of her. I mean, obviously you miss her so much more than me. Probably sounds stupid. I don't remember her, said Alice. Luke looked at her, shocked. You don't remember Gina? No, I mean, I know she used to be my friend, and I know she's dead. Wow. He seemed lost for words. Finally, he came up with one. Freaky. Alice stretched her neck from side to side. She felt a strong desire to eat or drink something quite specific, except she couldn't work out what it was. Frankly, it was making her feel quite irritable. Luke, she said snappishly, did I ever talk to you about Nick? If she was paying him $100 for a chat, she might as well gather some useful information. He smiled, revealing chunky white teeth. He was a walking multivitamin advertisement. You and Gina were always trying to get the male perspective from me on your marriage problems. I'd say, hey girls, I'm outnumbered here. Yes, said Alice. She was surprised at just how very, very irritable she was feeling. It's just that I don't remember why Nick and I are splitting up. Oh, said Luke. He flipped over on his stomach and started doing push-ups on the top veranda step. I remember once you said that in the end, your divorce all came down to one thing. I went home and told my girlfriend that night. I knew she'd be interested. He put one arm behind his back and started doing his push-ups on one hand. Was that really necessary? So, said Alice as he switched arms with a grunt, what was that one thing?
I can't remember.
He flipped back over and grinned at the expression on Alice's face. You want me to call her? Could you? He pulled out a mobile phone from his pocket and pushed a button. Hey, babe. Yeah, no, nothing's wrong. I'm just with a client. Do you remember I told you that lady said her divorce was caused by one thing? Yeah. No, I just want to know what was that one thing. He listened. Really? You sure? Okay. Love ya. He hung up and looked at Alice. Lack of sleep. Lack of sleep, repeated Alice. That doesn't make much sense. No, that's what my girlfriend said. But I remember Gina seemed to understand. Alice sighed and scratched the side of her face. She was sick of hearing about Gina. I'm feeling really grumpy. I need chocolate or something. You probably need to see your dealer, said Luke. My dealer? What next? Was she a drug addict? Did she drop the kids off at school and then go home and snort a few lines of cocaine? She must be. How else did she know this drug addict sort of terminology, like snort a few lines? The coffee shop. Your body is screaming for a flat white. But I don't drink coffee, said Alice. You're a caffeine junkie, said Luke. I never see you without a takeaway coffee in your hand. I haven't had a coffee since my accident. Have you had a headache? Well, yes, but I thought that was the injury. It was probably the caffeine withdrawal as well. This might be a good opportunity to give it up. I've been trying to get you to cut back for ages. No, said Alice, because now the desire she'd been feeling had a label. She could smell coffee beans. She could taste it. She wanted it right now. Do you know where I get my coffee? Sure, Dino's. According to you, they do the best coffee in Sydney. Alice looked at him blankly. Next to the cinema on the highway. Right. Alice stood up. Well, thanks. Oh, we're done? Okay. Luke stood up, towering over her. He seemed to be waiting for something. Alice realized with a start that he wanted his money. She went inside and found her purse. It was physically painful to hand over two $50 notes. He actually wasn't that good looking at all. Luke's huge hand closed cheerfully around the cash. Well, I hope you're back to yourself next week, eh? We'll do a killer session to make up. Great, beamed Alice. She paid this man over $100 to tell her how to exercise each week. She watched him roar out of the driveway and shook her head. Right, coffee. She looked at the step where Luke had done his push-ups, and suddenly she was down on her hands and knees, palms flat, body horizontal, stomach muscles pulled in hard, and she was bending her elbows and bringing her chest smoothly down toward the step. One, two, three, four. Good Lord, she was doing push-ups. She counted to 30 before she collapsed, her chest burning, arms aching, and yelled, "Beat that!" as she looked around triumphantly for someone who wasn't there. There was silence. Alice hugged her knees to her chest and looked at the for sale sign across the road. She had a feeling the person she'd been looking for was Gina. Gina. It was very strange to miss a person she didn't even know. Chapter 24. Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. Well, I don't know. You seemed a bit grumpy this morning. Is that allowed? Are therapists allowed to have feelings? I don't think so, Jay. Save them for your own therapy sessions. Not on my time, buddy. I really wanted a bit more praise when I showed you how many pages I'd written for my homework. Couldn't you tell that as a therapist? I mean, I know you're not meant to read it, but the reason I brought along my notebook was so you could say something like, "Wow, I wish all my clients were as committed to this process as you." Or you could have said, "What nice handwriting I had." Just a suggestion. You're the one who is meant to be good with people. Instead, you just looked a bit taken aback, as if you didn't even remember asking me to do the homework. It always bugged me when teachers forgot to ask for the homework they'd set. It made the world seem undependable. Anyway, today you wanted to talk about the coffee shop incident. Personally, I think you were just curious about it. You were feeling a bit bored for a Monday morning and thought it might spice things up. You seemed quite testy when I said I preferred to talk about Ben and the adoption issue. The customer is always right, Jeremy. This is what happened in the coffee shop, if you must know. It was a Friday morning, and I'd stopped in at Dino's on the way to work. I was having a large skim cappuccino because I wasn't pregnant or in the middle of the cycle. There was a woman at the table next to me with a baby and a toddler about 2 years old. A little girl with brown curly hair. Ben has brown curly hair. Well, actually he doesn't because he gets it cut really close to his head like a car thief. But I've seen photos from before we met. When I used to imagine our children, I always gave them brown curly hair like Ben's. So there was that, but she wasn't particularly cute or anything. She had a dirty face, and she was being sort of whiny. The mother was talking on her mobile phone and smoking a cigarette. Well, she wasn't smoking a cigarette at all, but she looked like a smoker. That sort of thin, edgy face. She was telling someone a story on the mobile phone that was all about how she put someone in their place. She kept saying, "It was just too funny." How can something be too funny, Jeremy? Anyway, she wasn't watching the little girl. It's like she forgot the child even existed. Dino's is on the Pacific Highway. The door is always being opened and closed as people come in and out. So I was watching the little girl, not in a weird, obsessive, infertile way. Just watching her, idly. The door opened to let in a mother's group. Prams and mothers. I thought, time to go. I stood up and the mothers came crashing through with their giant prams, sending chairs and tables skidding, and I watched the little girl slip out the door and onto the street. The woman on the phone kept talking. I said, "Excuse me," and nobody heard me. Two mothers had already sat down and were busy unbuttoning shirts and pulling out breasts to feed babies. This relaxed attitude to breastfeeding has got a bit too relaxed, if you ask me, while they shrieked coffee orders across the room. As I walked out of the coffee shop, the little girl was toddling straight toward the curb. Semi-trailers and four-wheel drives were thundering down the highway. I had to run to get to her. I scooped her into the air just as she was about to step down into the gutter. I saved the kid's life. And I looked back to the coffee shop, and the thin-faced mother was still on her mobile phone, and the mother's group was deep in conversation, and the little girl was in my arms, smelling of sugar and maybe a touch of cigarette smoke. One fat little hand resting so trustingly on my shoulder. And I kept walking. I just walked off with her. I wasn't thinking. It wasn't like I was planning to dye her hair blonde and drive off to the Northern Territory to live with her in a caravan by the sea, where we would both become nut brown in the sun and live on seafood and fresh fruit, and I could homeschool her and... kidding. I wasn't thinking any of that. I was just walking. The little girl was giggling as if it was a game. If she'd cried, I would have taken her straight back, but she was giggling. She liked me. Maybe she was grateful that I saved her life. And then, pounding feet behind me, and the thin-faced woman grabbing at my shoulder, screaming, "Hey!" Her face filled with terror, her nails scratching my skin as she dragged the little girl out of my arms. And then the little girl did cry because she got a fright. And the mother was saying, "It's okay, sweetie, it's okay," and looking at me with such revulsion. Oh, God, the shame and the horror. Some of the mothers had come out of the coffee shop and were standing silently, cupping their babies' heads and staring as if I was a traffic accident. The owner of the coffee shop, Dino himself, I guess, had come out too. I'd only ever seen the top half of him over the counter. He was shorter than I expected. It was a surprise, like seeing a newsreader in full length. It's the only time I've ever seen him serious. He's normally one of those permanent chucklers. All those people watching me and judging, it was like I was bleeding in public. I felt something come loose in my mind. I really did. It was an actual physical sensation of going crazy. Maybe there is a word for it, Jeremy? I collapsed to my knees on the footpath, which was so unnecessary, and also excruciatingly painful. The grazes took weeks to heal. That's when Alice turned up. She was wearing a new jacket I'd never seen before, hurrying into Dino's, handbag swinging, frowning. I saw the expression on her face when she recognized me. She actually recoiled, as if she'd seen a rat. She must have been mortified. I had to pick her local coffee shop for my public meltdown. She was nice, though. I have to admit, she was nice. She came and knelt down beside me, and when our eyes met, it reminded me of when we were children, and we'd run into each other in the school playground, and I would suddenly feel as if I'd been performing on a stage all day, because only Alice knew my real self. "What happened?" she whispered. I was crying too hard to talk. She fixed everything. It turned out she knew the mother of the child, as well as some of the mother's group women. There was a lot of intense mother-to-mother talk while I stayed kneeling on the footpath. She made their faces soften. The crowd melted away. She helped me up off the footpath and took me to her car and strapped me into the passenger seat. "Do you want to talk about it?" she said. I said I didn't. "Where do you want to go?" she said. I said I didn't know. Then she did exactly the right thing and drove me to Franny. We sat on Franny's tiny balcony, drinking tea and eating buttered arrowroot biscuits, and we didn't talk about what had happened. In fact, we talked about something quite interesting. I could see some new stationery on Franny's desk, and it prompted me to ask her about the time I found her writing a mysterious letter when I was a teenager. I told her that Alice and I had been convinced she had a secret lover. Franny didn't look embarrassed, just dismissive. She waved her hand impatiently as if it wasn't an important subject. She said she had once been briefly engaged when she was in her late 30s, and she still wrote occasionally to her ex-fiancé, and she probably just hadn't wanted to talk about it at the time. "So you're still friends?" said Alice, all agog. "I guess you could say that," Franny had said. There was a peculiar quizzical expression on her face. "And he writes back?" I asked. And she said, "Well, no." So that was odd. And it seemed like she was about to say more, but then we had to rush off because Alice had to pick up the children from school. So I never got to hear more about this man, this Phil, who never answers her letters. Did she leave him at the altar all those years ago? Why has she never mentioned him before? I've been meaning to call Franny to ask her about it, but I haven't even got the energy to be nosy these days. Also, I've been avoiding her because I know she thinks I should stop trying to have a baby. She said it at least 2 years ago. She said that sometimes you have to be brave enough to point your life in a new direction. I was a bit snappy at the time. I said a baby wasn't a direction. Besides which, as far as I can see, she never pointed her life in a new direction. We just fell into her life after Dad died. Thank goodness we did, of course. And who knows? Maybe there will be a convenient death in our local area. Think positive. That father two doors down always looks like he's about to drop dead when he mows the lawn. Anyway, the day after my psychotic episode, I went to my GP and asked for a referral to see a good psychiatrist. I wonder if you pay her a spotter's fee. So that's how I came into your life, Jeremy. When Alice walked into Dino's coffee shop, her senses were flooded with familiarity. The aroma of coffee and pastries. The rhythmic thud and hiss of the espresso machine. "Alice, my love," said a small, dark-haired man behind the counter. He was working the coffee machine with two hands, expertly and elegantly, as if it were a musical instrument. "I heard on the grapevine you had an accident. Lost your memory. But you never forget Dino, do you?" "Well," said Alice carefully, "I think I remember your coffee." Dino laughed as if she'd made a hilarious joke. "Of course you do, my love, of course you do. I won't be one moment. I know you're in a hurry, busy lady. Here you go." Without waiting for an order, he handed her a takeaway cup. "How you feeling anyway? You all better? You remember everything? You ready for the big day on Sunday? Mega meringue day at last. My daughter is so excited. All she talks about is, 'Daddy, Daddy, this pie will be the biggest in the world.'" "Hmm," said Alice. She was assuming that by Sunday she would have her memory back, because she really had no idea how to bake the world's biggest lemon pie. She peeled off the lid of the cup and took a sip. Ew, no sugar, and extremely strong. She took another sip. Actually, very good. She didn't need sugar. She took another sip, and another, and another. She wanted to tip back her head and pour it straight down her throat. The caffeine was zipping through her veins, clearing her head, making her heart beat faster and her vision sharpen. "Maybe you need two today?" chortled Dino. "Maybe I do," agreed Alice. "How is your sister, by the way?" said Dino, still chuckling. He appeared to be a jolly fellow. He stopped and clicked his fingers. "Ah, my mind. I keep forgetting. My wife gave me something to give to her." "My sister?" Alice ran her finger around the edge of the cup and licked the froth while she wondered how well Dino knew Elizabeth. "She's okay, I guess." "She is an entirely different person. She appears to be desperately unhappy. I'm not sure how I've wronged her. I went home and told my wife the whole story about how this lady walks off with a child, and then when she collapsed like that, crying, and none of us knew what to do, I was making her coffee, but that's no help, is it? Even Dino's coffee. Those stupid women wanting to call the police." Good Lord, had Elizabeth tried to kidnap a child? Alice felt pity. Her poor darling Elizabeth. How bad she must be feeling to so publicly break a rule. A horrified shame. How embarrassing. How illegal. And guilt. How could she be worried about what people thought when her sister was obviously suffering so badly? Dino continued, "I said to those women, no harm done. It was so lucky you showed up and made them see sense. And when you told me her story, so sad. Anyway, my wife gave me this. It's an African fertility figurine. If you have one of these dolls, you give birth to a beautiful baby. That's the legend." He handed her a small dark wooden doll with a post-it note stuck to it saying, "Alice." The doll seemed to be an African woman in tribal dress with an oversized head. "That's so sweet of your wife." Alice handled the doll reverently. Was his wife African, perhaps, and this was some sort of mystical tribal heirloom? "She bought it off the internet," confided Dino, "for her cousin who couldn't get pregnant. 9 months later, baby. Although, to be honest, not such a beautiful baby." He slapped his knee, his face creased with mirth. "I say to my wife, that's one ugly baby. Got a big head, like the doll." He could hardly speak, he was laughing so hard now. "Big head," I said, "like the doll." Alice smiled. Dino handed her another coffee, and he became serious again. "Nick came in the other day," he said. "You didn't look so good." I said, "You should get back together with your wife." I said, "It's not right. I remember when I first opened the shop, and you came in every weekend with little Madison, all three of you in overalls. She used to help you with the painting. You two were so proud of her. Never saw prouder parents, remember?" "Hmm," said Alice. "I told Nick that you two should get back together, be a family again," said Dino. I said, "What went so wrong you can't fix?" "None of my business, right?" My wife says, "Dino, it's not your business." I say, "I don't care. I say what I think. That's just me." "What did Nick say?" asked Alice. She was already halfway through the next cup of coffee. "He said, I would fix it if I could, mate." Alice drove home chanting Nick's words in her head. He would if he could, so therefore, why not? She had the takeaway cup of coffee in a handy cup holder close to the steering wheel. She found she could steer this enormous car with one hand and take sips of coffee with the other. So many useful new skills. The caffeine was making her tremble with energy. She felt like her eyes were protruding. When the light changed to green and the car in front didn't move straight away, she shoved it along with a bossy beep of her horn. That sharp voice was back in her head, working out everything she had to do before she picked the children up at 3:30 p.m. "You need to be on time, Mum," Tom had told her. "Monday afternoons are a pretty tight schedule." "Well, you can't spend your day lounging around eating custard tart. You won't fit into those beautiful clothes for long, will you? Speaking of which, what about laundry? You probably should do laundry when you get home. Mothers are always complaining about washing. What else do they complain about? Groceries. When do you shop? Check pantry. Do list. You probably have a list somewhere. You seem like the sort of person who has a list. What about dinner tonight? Snacks when they come home from school? Were the children used to freshly baked cookies on arrival? Ring Sophie. She's your best friend. You must have told her something about what's going on. Your diary says you've got a mega meringue meeting at 1 p.m. Presumably you've got to run it. Great, that should be a hoot. Find out where it is. How? Ring someone. Ring that Kate Harper if you must. Or your boyfriend. Would fix it if he could. Would fix it if he could. Laundry. Yes, you already said that. Laundry. Yes, calm down. She shouldn't have had the 2 cups of coffee. Her heart was beating much too fast. She took a few deep, shaky breaths to steady herself. She couldn't keep up with her own body. She felt as if she needed to run crazily across a huge expanse of grass, flinging her body about like a puppy let off its leash. When she got home, she ran through the house as if she were in some sort of weird competition, gathering piles of clothes from laundry hampers and the floors of the children's bedrooms and bathrooms. There was a lot. She pounded down the stairs to the laundry. No surprise to see a huge, shiny white washing machine taking up half the room. She lifted the lid, ready to toss in the clothes, when she felt a rush of feelings. Embarrassed. Betrayed. Shocked. What did it mean? The memory flipped to the front of her brain like a neat index card. Of course, something had happened right here. Right here in this extraordinarily clean laundry. Something horrible. That's right. It was a party. In the summer, still warm late in the evening, there were tubs of ice on the laundry floor. Bottles of beer and wine and champagne poking out of the melting ice cubes. She went to get a new bottle of champagne and she was laughing as she pushed open the door. And when she saw them, she automatically said, "Hi," like an idiot, before her brain caught up with what they were doing, what she was seeing. A tiny, graceful woman with closely cropped red hair, sitting up on the washing machine, her legs apart, and Nick standing in front of her, his hands flat on the machine on either side of her legs, his head bent. Her husband was kissing another woman in the laundry. Alice stared down at the pile of clothes in the machine. She could see the woman's face so clearly, the delicate bones of her face. She could even hear her voice, sugar-sweet and childlike to match her tiny body. It made her teeth ache. She poured in a scoop of washing powder and slammed down the machine lid. How dare Nick guffaw when she asked if he'd had an affair? That kiss was worse than catching them in bed together. It was worse because it was so obviously a kiss at the beginning. Early kisses were so much more erotic than early sex. Sex at the beginning of a relationship was fumbly and silly and vaguely gynecological, like a doctor's appointment. But fully clothed kisses before you'd slept together were delicious and mysterious. Nick had kissed her for the first time up against the car after they'd just seen Lethal Weapon 3 at the movies. He tasted of popcorn with a hint of chocolate. He was wearing a black jumper over a white t-shirt and jeans, and he was a bit stubbly under his lower lip. And even as he was kissing her, she was already carefully saving it up as a memory, knowing that she'd be sitting at her computer screen the next day, reliving it. She'd pulled it out and replayed it like an old movie so many times. She had described it in minute detail to her friend Sophie, who had been in a relationship for 5 years and had therefore moaned with jealousy, even though Jack was the love of her life. Sophie, her oldest friend, bridesmaid at her wedding. She would ring Sophie right now. There was no way she hadn't called Sophie and told her about the horror of that kiss in the laundry. First she would have called Elizabeth, then Sophie. She would have skewed the story for each of them. For Elizabeth, she would have concentrated on her own feelings. "How could he do that to me?" she would have asked, and her voice would have quivered. For Sophie, she would have spun out the story for maximum shock. "So, I walked into the laundry to get some champagne, and you will never in a million years guess what I saw. Go on.
Guess.
From Elizabeth, she would have got sympathy and very clear instructions on what to do next. From Sophie, she would have got shock and fury and an invitation to go out right now and get very drunk. She found her address book and Sophie's mobile number. It seemed that Sophie was living in DY, the Northern Beaches. Good for her. She'd always wanted to live by the beach.